What a week. What 2 weeks it's been. The PCPO saga, I think, is 2 weeks old at this point, and it just shows no sign of stopping. We'll be finding out later this afternoon, apparently between 2:30 and 3 o'clock, or 3:30 rather, whether Patrick Brown is going to be allowed to run for the leadership of the PC Party of Ontario. In the meantime, though, we will talk about it with our panelists, Sally Hauser, Senior Consultant at Navigator Limited, Jamie Ellerton, Principal at Canaptus Limited, and Warren Kinsella, President at the Daisy Group. Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
All right. So, Jamie, I'm going to start with you. You know, this story has more twists and turns than a soap opera. And the latest one, of course, is Randy Hillier lobbing a grenade and into the integrity commissioner, filing a complaint against Patrick Brown, saying that he's, among other things, taken free trips when he shouldn't have, and saying that there's money missing, all sorts of things. You know, how long can this go on? The party's still up in the polls, but at a certain point, it got to take a toll, doesn't it?
Well, I think this can go on all the way through to March 10, which is the day that they will be announcing who wins this leadership race. But I think sooner or later, it will start to kind of impact public opinion. Obviously, in the kind of day-to-day, the general public doesn't follow the minutiae of these sorts of things quite like those involved in politics proper do, in terms of the ongoing working in this. But it definitely is creating some perceptions that'll be hard for the party to manage. This leadership race itself right now, as the way it's getting framed in the media, has kind of become a referendum on do you believe Patrick Brown or do you believe the allegations of the woman have come forward and now what Mr. Hillier has filed with the integrity commissioner. But ultimately, this race is going to be decided by Ontario PC members who will have to decide who they feel is best to fit the party. And even though Patrick Brown is sucking up a lot of the oxygen in the media coverage of this, I think members are kind of having different conversations, and ultimately, stay tuned.
Well, ultimately, I mean, those members, if he's allowed to run, could make him the leader of the party again. They could do that. A lot of the members there were people who were signed up by Patrick Brown when he ran for leader initially. So, Warren, it is conceivable that he could come back and lead the party again. What do you think the effect of that would be?
Well, it'd be a disaster. I mean, you know, the guy, he has turned his party into a three-ring circus. Like, it's like P.T. Barnum's in charge. And, you know, my understanding is there were 13 clippings about Ontario politics at Queen's Park this morning. And 12 of them were about Patrick Brown. So, you know, while it's probably unhelpful to Kathleen Wynne and Andrea Horvath that this guy is eating up so much bandwidth, it's definitely unhelpful to Ms. Mulroney, Ms. Elliott, Mr. Ford, and just, you know, the PC party in general.
Like, but does he owe them? And I mean, I'm putting myself in Patrick Brown's shoes for a second. If you felt you had been framed, as he says he thinks he basically was, if you felt that, you know, you had lost your job, you'd lost your livelihood, that the only thing you'd really done since you left university is work in politics, wouldn't you fight back? Can you not, you know, have some understanding that he probably would?
Not in the way he's doing it. I mean, he's setting fire on the house that he wants to own. Like, you know, Ford and Mulroney and Elliott all said the same thing. He deserves an opportunity to defend his name and restore his reputation. And I think all of us expected him to do that. We didn't expect him to strap on a flamethrower and start burning down the party. And that's what he's doing. And that's the danger for smart guys like Jamie. Is like, how do they rebuild the party after the leadership? They got 6 weeks between finding out who their leader is and when the writ drops. And I don't think that's enough time to repair the damage that this guy's doing.
Okay, well, they're still leading in the polls, though, 38%, Sally. So even with all this going on, even without a leader, with this, you know, the house burning down, is this a sign that voters in Ontario are just desperately looking for something else?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I heard somebody say, well, you know, at least it's garnering a lot of attention on the PC Party of Ontario, but, you know, it was train wrecks garner a lot of attention, and doesn't necessarily mean that people want to hop on board that train as it's careening out of control. I think we probably will see in the coming days, and certainly the coming weeks, those polls start to shift a little bit. You know, as it was alluded to, this is taking up a lot of oxygen in Ontario politics, but I think what you're going to see is Kathleen Wynne and Andrea Horvath, who, you know, I think have been happy to watch the progress progressive conservatives hang themselves with their own rope, are going to start, you know, trying to edge their way back in and get into that real kind of campaign mode. And I definitely think that there's a lot of opportunity for Andrea Horvath out there with a tremendously unpopular Liberal government for them to pick up some of those, you know, even in Northern Ontario, you do get those, what I like to refer to as, you know, throw to bums out voters, where you get those kind of conservative and NDP switchers. And I think that'll be interesting to see where she can move the dial there.
Okay, Jamie, if Patrick Brown does succeed in coming back, if he succeeds in being allowed to run in the race, first of all, which we'll know later this afternoon, and by some, you know, by whatever happens in this leadership race, he actually did win. Do you think that the next election would turn into basically a referendum on Me Too? Because a lot of people out there, a lot of people who do agree with Patrick Brown and support him say that, you know, this is an example of that movement going too far. And there are a lot of people in general who do share that view. I don't think that's something necessarily you want to win an election on, but would that be something that the election would be decided around?
I do think that would definitely feature prominently in a general election, if indeed that played out. But from what I see in terms of talking with members and what I'm seeing online in terms of the Facebook and Twitter chatter of party grassroots party members, whether or not you believe Patrick Brown or you believe the women who have come forward with these allegations, there's kind of a general consensus that he is probably not best fit to lead the party going forward. So yes, his most ardent and loyal supporters are amongst those talking the loudest right now. But for your riding activist who, say, has been involved in the party for 20 years, who probably doesn't post too much and isn't engaged in the day-to-day frantic conversation of all this, they're scratching their heads and saying, we got to take care of the party and we got to do what's best. And they're ultimately right now weighing as to who's best to fit to unite the party going forward.
Okay, Warren, if Patrick Brown does stay in the race, if he is allowed to run, whose candidacy do you think he would hurt the most of the other four people who are in it right now?
I think he hurts all of them. Is eating up. I mean, here we are. We're not talking about Carolyn Mulroney's ideas or, you know, the meet and greet that she had in Brantford this morning, or she tried to. I guess it was canceled because of flooding. We're not talking about what Christine Elliott is doing or Doug Ford, how he did in Eastern Ontario yesterday. We're talking about Patrick Brown and all the controversy set off. You know, this morning's Toronto Star talking about how this intern, who's half his age, is also his girlfriend and was accompanying him on trips. And who paid for those trips? So my understanding is that's coming out in the paper tomorrow. So, you know, it's bad for any political party to go through this stuff. And I really don't understand this man saying, as he did, it's not all about me. Like, it is all about him. He's making it all about him. And he's damaging the good reputation of people like Jamie and others just by association.
Okay, well, you know what? If that is true, everything you've said and he's damaging everyone else, there could be the argument that maybe leaving him in the race to lose, potentially, because he could lose the leadership. Right now, a poll shows that actually he would fare the worst of all five candidates. A poll came out a couple days ago in terms of the members' support as best next leader. Leave him in that race, PC party, and let the process play out so that he has nothing left to say. Because right now, Garfield Dunlap, MPP, former MPP for Simcoe North, is saying that Brown will probably sue. He'll probably launch a legal action if the party's provincial nomination committee denies his attempt to reseek the leadership. So, Sally, is the party in a hard spot? I mean, should they just let him run to burn this thing out so there's no, you know, legal legs left to stand on?
Yeah, well, you know, they're damned if they do and damned if they
exactly.
Don't. There's no other way to say it. You know, you talk about that flamethrower, and he's clearly showed that he's, you know, if for instance they decide today to not let him run, that he's not just going to go away quietly. You know, so I think he'll continue to dominate the media one way or the other. At the same time, even though he's faring the worst in the polls, stranger things have happened, particularly if you have a membership base that are just frustrated and sick of it all. You know, you leave him in and there is still an outside chance that he could be going into the next election as the leader. And I think about the people, you know, at the Riding Association, those who are going to be door knocking. You know, those are going to be running kind of, you know, phone banks and managing offices, and what that, you know, the potential of them doing that for him as a leader, you know, that must be tremendously frustrating.
It must be. On the one side, they wouldn't have to reprint the People's Guarantee because his face is on it. There's a silver lining here. All right. Well, we come back. We're going to switch gears and talk about some federal stuff. That's what we usually talk about. Justin Trudeau's trip to India with our political panel. So stay tuned for more on Global News Radio 640 Toronto. All right. Let's talk some federal politics now. Justin Trudeau, our prime minister, is in India for a week-long trip that's supposed to be all about trade, but has seen a lot of photo ops instead. Justin Trudeau and his family by the Taj Mahal. Justin Trudeau standing by the Ganges River and posing some pretty spectacular outfits, I will say. His wardrobe for this trip, more attention on his fashion, I think, than on the rest of the family. But anyway, I digress. It's also been overshadowed somewhat by an accusation that he harbors Sikh extremists in his cabinet. This was made by an Indian politician. Here's how Justin Trudeau responded to that.
I certainly think we made it very, very clear that our stance in favor of a united India, our stance in favor of countering violent extremism is strongly held and consistent within our government.
All right. To discuss that and more, Sally Hauser, Jamie Ellerton and Warren Kinsella are on the line with us. Warren, I'm going to start with you. Is Trudeau's trip turning out to be a success here? Because I'm starting to have my doubts. Hi, Warren. Okay. Either Warren's not hearing
me. I had it on mute.
You had me on mute.
Yeah, I apologize. Well, I have my dog beside me, and I didn't want him to bark.
If your dog has an opinion on Justin Trudeau, I want to hear it, Warren.
He likes him. He likes him very much.
Does he like his trip to India? Give me a sense of why you think this trip is shaping up.
Well, you know, I saw the National Post story, and, you know, I don't think they like Justin Trudeau, so I checked some of the sources. So I looked at the Hindustan Times, for example, doing research for this important panel, and they said that he's received a warm reception at the Golden Temple in Amritsar. He was received by the national and local governments. He had people lined up to take pictures with him.
They also said that Modi didn't meet him at the airport, though, and that he was only spending one half a day of his whole trip doing business, and the rest was, you know, other stuff.
Yeah, but the history is Modi only meets with, people at the level of, you know, the President of the United States or the Prime Minister of Great Britain. So I didn't find that particularly revealing or difficult or problematic. So I think that he is having a fine trip, but I don't think that this, you know, Kremlinology about it being controversial or unpopular is so. If I had advised him, would I have, you know, advised him not to say I have more Sikhs in my cabinet than they do in India? I probably would advise him not to say that.
Probably.
On balance, the pictures look pretty good.
Okay, well, the pictures do look good. Sally, the pictures are very pretty, in fact. But some people are grumbling about the way the trade side of it's been portrayed because the headline was $1 billion trade deal. And Trudeau walked that back and said, no, what I meant is $250 million, $250 million investment for Canada, $750 million we're going to invest in India. Not quite the same thing as saying it's $1 billion in trade.
Yeah, you know, I think this is interesting, and it's obviously the Liberal government, and certainly Trudeau, does these international trips really quite well. He does do fabulous, taking great photos in front of, you know, wonderful landmarks and in great clothes, and that does very, very well for him. But here I think where you've seen the kind of organizers have, you know, forgotten about the business side of it a little bit. It seems to have taken a back seat to the family tour. And that's something I think that they've got to start being a little more careful about. You know, it's not the first time that there's been criticisms around the kind of selfie culture, but particularly, you know, for a big trade trip was supposed supposed to be. There seems to be very little actual talk and information and details coming out about why he's actually over there. I think on balance, man, but, you know, the people see those photos and think it's great and, think, you know, be happy that our prime minister is on the international stage. They run the risk of treating things a little too lightly.
Okay, Jamie, is he doing this for domestic consumption rather than foreign politics for the Indian diaspora in Canada and the voters that represents?
Yeah, I think that's definitely driving a lot of this. They've, I think, clearly made the political calculus that getting knocked in the mainstream press for all the photo ops they're doing and prioritizing the kind of political optics of this is worth it for connecting with the pockets of seats in the western parts of the GTA and in other parts of British Columbia. The domestic politics is always going to be part of this. And when you even look at the trade aspect of things, if any real major trade deal or investment's getting announced, all of these things were already lined up in advance and it's being announced here. And so it's kind of hard to quantify these things on a day-to-day basis or a trip-to-trip basis as to where the real value is for Canada and kind of judge this on the immediacy of one anecdote. I think the most encouraging thing coming out of this is for a country that is known to be rather closed and make it hard for foreign businesses to have majority ownership and control of companies and operations in their marketplace. The Fairfax financial announcement of the $200 million for a bank and owning the controlling 51% stake in that, in terms of what that means for opening up the financial markets in India, is a good news not only for Fairfax, but hopefully long-term for Canadian financial industries at large.
Okay. Let's move to something else now that's coming down the pipe here. February 27th is the federal budget. We know that's going to be the usual sort of thing in February. The budget usually comes down February, March, but this year it's going to be a gender budgeted budget. There's a gender budgeting blueprint that has evolved in recent months. A memo came out about this that lays out choices, a proposed gender equality framework for the budget. Okay, I look at this and I scratch my head and say, what does that even mean? And then when I read what there means, I just get angry. Sally, gender equality budgeting. I mean, is this government taking the feminist angle just a little bit too far here?
No, I think it's actually great, Tasha, to hear this, to be looking at the economy in a way that really addresses some needs of women who, as we know, are the ones who are the lowest paid or often the most in poverty, along with children. My major hope in this is that it's not like so many of the things that the Liberals have come forward with, that it's not just talk. I hope we do see real action on affordable child care, on a national housing strategy, on even a minimum federal minimum wage. Those things that really do help many women living in poverty and women who are able to advance. So I think it's actually a great way to look at it, but I'm a little skeptical, and you'll pardon me if I am, that we're actually going to see real results out of this for women.
Yeah, and you know what? It goes back to something I was saying in the last segment on the show. We're always encouraging women to go into male-dominated fields. I have yet to hear anyone encourage men to go into female-dominated fields. Warren, until I hear that, all I hear here is a lot of politics around this budget that has nothing to do with money and all to do with women's vote.
Well, I've seen a lot of coverage, and I say this as a guy who works for his wife, so she's the
It's very
partner.
Progressive
I'm
of
not.
You.
So, and she is the managing partner. The economy has been going, quite well. I mean, there's been consecutive monthly job growth for a year and a half. There was some drop off in the past few days on part-time jobs, but that's, if you're going to shed jobs, those are the ones you want to. We're looking for full-time, well-paying jobs, and we've been benefiting from that. I think his Morneau's fiscal room is a bit tighter than it was a year ago. But what I expect him to stay in the budget is, we're delivering on our commitments to the middle class and the economy is functioning well. And, the budget that really matters is going to be less the one that's coming up and one that is next year, which, believe it or not, is an election year.
We can't wait for that. All right, Jamie, last word to you on this. Gender equality budgeting, is that just designed for that election year?
I do think a lot of this has to do with the government's perceived desire to continue to trump all things feminism and to kind of continue to beat that horn. Let's not forget this is the government who, although proudly is pro-choice, constantly wants to keep talking about the abortion debate and therefore their electoral advantage in terms of how they talk about this stuff. I think one of the things the Liberals are going to face a challenge about the perception of this is if they look at gender-based analysis and the kind of things you hear in academia, I think real people don't really know what that means, and it's really jargon heavy, and they have to complete the sentence in terms of talking about what these things actually mean and how they're going to do it and how it actually does improve the lives of Canadians. If it's just high level rhetoric, it indeed is nothing more than a political lens frame they're hoping to connect with those constituencies.
All right. It's all about constituencies at the end of the day. Okay. And our constituency is done for today. I want to thank Sally Hauser, Jamie Ellerton, and Warren Kinsella so much for being on the panel. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sasha.